Welcome to the Bible Questions Podcast, brought to you by BibleQuestions.org and the Holly Street Church of Christ. This podcast is dedicated to answering your Bible questions from the Bible. My name is Jeff, and along with Brian, we are the hosts of this program.
Welcome to episode 2 of our study on popular questions that have been submitted to our website, BibleQuestions.org, over the years. And in our last episode, Jeff and I looked at several different questions that people have submitted over the years, what we would call our more popular questions or popular subjects. So on our website, under the topics section, you'll notice there's a page called Popular, and there you'll find a list of 44 categories of questions that have, you know, are submitted frequently, or as I mentioned, you know, subjects that people often submit questions about. So if you have not had a chance to listen to the last episode, please do, because we looked at the sections on church. You know, how to find the church that is good for you. We took a look at questions like, or sections, I should say, on ghosts, on angels, and questions and subjects related to that. And so please take a listen to that, and you'll, I think, find it very interesting. Now, in this episode today, Jeff, we're going to talk about relationships. And the questions that we look at to begin with here are going to center around questions by, like, you know, Cain's wife. Where did she come from? Or are we able to recognize family in heaven? And so those and other questions we're going to take a look at from our popular section. So, Jeff, hope all is well with you. And let me hand it over to you for you to dive into this.
Yes, thank you much, Brian. Appreciate that. And appreciate our listeners. If, as you said, if they have not listened to the immediately preceding podcast, they want to go back there first. Indeed, we talked, kind of set the stage, if you will, for a number of frequently asked questions that we get to the website. And we have seen a lot of questions. In our previous podcast, we mentioned we've been doing the website and answering online questions around the planet for over 20 years, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of questions. And after a while, as you said, we kind of start to see a pattern or repeated questions. And one of the first ones we'll do today really does appear to be, I don't know if I would call it number one in terms of frequency.
It's definitely top five, isn't it?
I would tend to say, yes, it is indeed the top five. And simply stated, it's where did Cain get his wife? If you're not familiar with that, basically the account is in Genesis, first book of the Old Testament, roughly around chapter 5. Actually, chapter 4, where it talks about Cain being one of the sons of Adam and Eve, after having killed his brother Abel, goes to another land, you know, away from the general area where the Garden of Eden was. In that land, he, his wife, which, you know, sexual relations, and had a son, a child. Now, I suspect a lot of people may do Bible reading based on some sort of a organized plan. And a lot of those, you know, read the Bible in a year, kind of. And we have some of those on our website under study aids. We'll often start in Genesis. So yeah, we get a lot of questions about the creation, and a lot of questions related to fusion regarding Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2, where Genesis chapter 1 talks about God creating male and female. Genesis chapter 2 talking about creating Adam and Eve. And some people, you know, reading through that, think, oh, okay, those are two sequential accounts. If you really dig into it, it's not necessarily a sequential account. It's more like going back and further providing information that happened on day 6. And the reason why I kind of say that as sort of like an introduction is some people might say, well, chapter 1, God created man and woman, or male and female, who knows where, maybe multiple scattered around the planet. No. And then he does the Garden of Eden thing where he's creating a man, Adam, and creating a woman, Eve, while everyone else is around the planet doing whatever their thing. And then you have the unfolding events with Adam and Eve's sin, expulsion from the garden, and Abel growing up. Abel, Cain, Eve's, and encounters these other people from some other, you know, place that God created previously, blah. And there he finds a wife, marries her, and has a kid. Well, it's basically, some people may think that. there's a couple things to consider if you look a little bit more closely at the scripture. And I think probably one of the most revealing ones is in Genesis chapter 3, verse 20, where it says, "And Adam called his wife's name Eve." Of course, this is after God miraculously created woman from a rib of Adam. And Adam called his wife's name Eve because, now watch it, she was the mother of all living. That's an insightful verse. It certainly says if Eve is the mother of all living, there were not other men and women created elsewhere around the planet back in chapter 1. Okay, so leveraging off of that verse, and you can also notice that when you get into chapter 4, that it doesn't say Cain went to the land of Nod and found his wife. It doesn't say that at all. Right? So you want to assume that. It can't be anyway, based on what we saw in Genesis 3:20. Having said that, people may go, well, wait a minute. Wasn't it just Adam, Eve, Cain? Well, that's it. That's all there were. No one else. Well, necessarily, quite frankly. A couple different things. One is you have to recognize that when Cain killed Abel, well, who knows how much time had passed since the expulsion from garden and their birth. I mean, certainly long enough to grow up, almost like have an occupation, so to speak, farmer, etc. The other thing I would quickly add is that generally speaking, and some people get offended with this, the Bible normally doesn't record birth of daughters, or so sons, much less daughters. So you'll notice, for example, in Genesis chapter 5, after the account with Genesis chapter 5, verse 4, as the days of Adam were 800 years, and he had sons and daughters. Wait a minute. The daughters are named. The occurrence of the birth of the daughters is not named. Okay, so that just opens a whole door to, potential females being born, during the time of Cain and Abel, etc. And that potential males plus marriage with, well, potentially, again, that's kind of speculative. I guess the key point here is the Bible doesn't record the fact of the daughters specifically, but it does say there were. It certainly opens the door. Some people may immediately object and go, whoa, what are you trying to say, that the human race was born from incest? Well, yes, you're going to see that not only here with Adam and Eve, their children, but you're also going to see it with Noah, humanity wiped out, but Noah, his wife, three sons, four wives, and the whole world's population from them, repopulated. And Ryan might say, well, wait, Jeff, what are you talking about here? Are you advocating incest? And I go, no, I'm not. Time out. One of the things we need to recognize, according to the scriptures, is that the concept of incest, sinful, occurs long after the creation, thousands of years later, the time of the law of Moses, Leviticus 18, long after Adam and Eve, long after the flood, etc. And well, certainly by that point in man's history, God says this is something you don't want to do, marriage to a near relative. Brian, I think it's kind of a fascinating thing because normally we say, well, yes, that makes genetic sense, right? Because of inbreeding and deformity. Or God created man, woman, everything initially as good. Certainly suggests not a lot of genetic abnormalities, which would permit near kin to marry kids, without the harm of potential damage, so to speak. Oh, bottom line, where did Cain get his wife? Well, Bible does not explicitly say. Been a sister, may have been a niece. Marriage between Abel and one of the other daughters, cannot tell. But certainly from Eve being the mother of all living, we know it's not him marrying someone from some tribe from somewhere else on the planet God had created in Genesis. Anything you want to add to that, Brian?
Yeah, it was a unique time, Jeff, if you think about right after the creation. And I'd like to take our listeners over to Genesis chapter 1, because when I say that it was a unique time, and the focus seemed to be on populating the earth, right? And so Genesis chapter 1, verse 28 says, this was after, I guess I should back up to 27. So God created man in his own image, in the image of God. He created him male and female. He created them. Verse 28, then God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. So we can see that that was God's command to them. And as you pointed, I mean, there's just some things we could guess, we don't really know. So for instance, when it comes to those genetic repercussions, if you had kin relationships, who's to say that because God wanted to, you know, populate the earth, if he didn't sort of suspend or eliminate that as an issue until the population reached a certain number, and then he enforced that sort of thing, right? We don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us. And so I guess we could just guess, but at the end of the day, it's more of a curiosity, I think. And we just have to be very careful, once again, not to just start plugging in random guesses. If you
will. Exactly. And, you know, we can maybe make some educated guesses, but again, we need to be very careful because, as we often emphasize on our podcast, you want to speak where the Bible speaks, be silent where the Bible is silent. You want to infer only what is, you know, necessary, stay away from speculation. And all of that. The other thing I might mention, at least in this particular section, back on our website in the topical index, we do have a little bit of material regarding cane under C. In fact, we got a little entry there, cane, and then we got a separate little entry for Cain's wife. I might also mention, since this everything we've been talking about runs totally contrary to established evolutionary theory, that I'd recommend looking under creation as well as E for evolution.
Excellent. All right. So the next category we are going to take a look at is recognizing family in heaven. And so we get questions often along that line. Hey, will I recognize my family in heaven? Or maybe somebody has lost a loved one recently and they're very distraught and they're just curious. Will I be able to see my wife or my husband or my daughter again? And will I recognize them in heaven? So it's a good question. You know, the Bible teaches us from the story of the rich man and Lazarus in Luke chapter 16, that when we die, we will all go to Hades, which is the holding place of mankind until the day of judgment, when we will be formally judged, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10. All of us will stand before God in judgment. And then we'll either be sent to heaven or hell, right? So Matthew chapter 25, around verses 34 to 41, if you read that section, it just talks about on that day of judgment, we will be sent to either heaven or hell. Okay, so the Bible is very clear on that. Now, one of the things as a result of what we just saw that the Bible taught, none of our family members would be in heaven now, as we will not be sent to heaven or hell until the judgment. So even though they are not at their final destiny, if you will, it does appear, however, that we will know our final destiny because the rich man was sent to torments where he was suffering and Lazarus was sent to Abraham's bosom where he was comforted. Now, Jeff, we could get into a discussion about how some say, well, this was a parable. It may not necessarily be what happens. I would just point out that to me, as clear as Jesus is, and we see even Abraham in there and speaking and how Abraham talks about there's a great gulf fixed. You can't go from, for instance, paradise to torments. He also didn't allow the rich man to go back and warn his brothers. That seems pretty real to me.
It definitely does. Now, admittedly, we're talking about a departed spirit. There's language in there about tongue and finger and drop of water, et cetera. And I honestly don't quite know what that means. But in terms of, as you said, the reality of the account, the specific people being named and specific description of the surrounding condition or environment. Yeah, as some people say, what's a parable? Well, if that's a parable, then what's the reality? Because the whole account just appears to be, you know, Jesus giving us insight into some conversation that happened in Hades.
Yeah, and Jesus told one of the thieves on the cross, today you will be with me in paradise. So he himself references one of the two realms of Hades that's in that section.
In fact, even Acts, to leverage off of that point, I think it's Acts 2, where Peter on the day of Pentecost talks about, you know, Jesus, you know, soul, you know, being in Hades. So there's external references beyond Luke 16 that point to this place. He's come with the departed. Jesus comes along and tells us a story about it. And I don't mean story in a kid's story sense, but in a very real, in a way that you would just normally look at and go, oh, well, now that was a curious account of something that really happened.
That's right. And you know, as for the recognition of family in heaven, now the scriptures do not have anything to say about the recognition of others in heaven. However, we do know that our relationship with others will not be the same as it is on earth. And we know this because in Matthew chapter 22, Jesus said that we will not have relationships like marriage. And so Matthew 22, verse 30, Jesus says, "For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels of God in heaven." So this does not mean that we would not know our spouse. We are just told that we will be like angels in heaven, and you will not have that same marriage relationship. Now, once again, going back to this, you know, the story of the rich man and Lazarus in Luke chapter 16, we did see that the rich man recognized Abraham. He recognized Lazarus. So it would seem probable then, of course, that there would be recognition after death. And so one other quick point here, Jeff, and I'll turn it over to you then, that is that we know that we will be united with all the saved in heaven, as this will be the permanent home of the saved after judgment. So certainly if your spouse, child, or just close friend is a Christian and they die, well, if they're found to be faithful and you're found to be faithful, well, the good news is that you will both be in heaven. And I feel like, Jeff, there's probably a good chance you're going to recognize each other.
Yeah, Brian, it's interesting. Just a few moments ago, we were talking about Cain and the appropriate warning of not speculating, not going beyond what is written, et cetera. And the very next subject we get into is, you know, recognition in heaven, where admittedly, I think we make some pretty good arguments based on what the scriptures do reveal that in all probability, notice my words, I'm trying to choose them carefully, there will be recognition in heaven. It certainly seems to be recognition in Hades, even with disembodied spirits. As we know, in Judgment Day, the Great Resurrection, will be given some kind of an incorruptible spiritual body. Not exactly certain what that means, 1 Corinthians 15. But yeah, probably. And again, we have to be careful not to speculate. But I think we're on fairly firm ground here without useless speculation.
Agreed.
The other thing I might mention is sometimes I think when people ask that question, you know, we recognize each other in heaven, or, you know, I can't wait to, you know, be reunited with my wife in heaven, or whatever the case is, that people in the back of their minds may be thinking, they'll still be my spouse, they'll still be my husband, they'll still be my wife. And as you correctly pointed out, Jesus gave us a little bit of insight into that kind of existence. And he said, no, that's not the case. Now, maybe recognition, the marriage relationship does not continue on after death, which is again another of those interesting little tidbits that contradicts Mormonism teaches.
It almost appears that a marriage relationship would really serve no purpose in heaven, right? When you read about, you know, singing around the Lord's throne and doing all those things, if we're like angels in heaven, then I don't know that marriage relationship is necessary, right? Because you're already in heaven. You don't have a help meet. You don't have a need to help have somebody help you get to heaven. You're there. Anyways, food.
Right. But right. And you don't necessarily need to, you know, procreate and have children that will, you know, grow up and live on after you die.
Yeah.
Right. You know, nothing like that. But yeah, the coming back momentarily to the concept of Mormonism, where they have a concept of being married for time, life, and eternity. Meaning to be married to, you know, someone today, you're both dead. In the afterlife, you both can, you know, continue that marriage relationship, which flies, as we've said, in the face of what Jesus plainly taught here in Matthew 22. So yet another interesting, every one of these times we ought to do a podcast on more they teach, but again, that's more of a side comment. Before we leave this section on recognition in heaven, I thought I'd just vector our listeners to our website, where we do have some material. Generally speaking, under A for afterlife, but also if you look under H for heaven, got some articles that can tell us to some degree, again, based on what the Bible says. There's an article that says, what will we look like in heaven? And another that says, will we know each other in heaven? So if folks are interested in kind of digging more, though in some ways there's not a lot more, again, at our website, A for Afterlife and H for Heaven. Anything else regarding the recognition in the afterlife you can think of?
No, I think we're good. Why don't we move to the next section on our popular page? And this one, Jeff's about Jesus's brothers and sisters. And we often get questions kind of along the line, like, did Mary have other children after Jesus? Who were his brothers and sisters? What do we know about them? Those kinds of things. So, Jeff, what does the Bible tell us about that?
Brian, that's an interesting question that we get from people about Jesus and his family. And I think it's especially interesting if you look at what some religious groups, most notably Catholicism, teaches regarding Mary. For example, we know from the scriptures that Mary was a virgin when she had Jesus. Jesus was not a product of, you know, natural procreation between her and Joseph, that there was something, you know, miraculous, supernatural going on there, that Jesus was a virgin when, or Jesus, sorry, Mary was a virgin when she had Jesus. But the Catholics appear to want to continue that state for Mary, you know, the Virgin Mary. Sometimes they'll talk in terms of her perpetual virginity, that even though she was married to Joseph, there were no other, you know, no sexual relationship, no other children, etc. But, you know, if we dig into the scriptures, I think it's fairly clear that Mary was just a normal human being married to Joseph, and that between the two of them, they had several children after she had Jesus. Brian, if you want to tee up for us, let's start with Matthew chapter 1, verses 24 and 25. And so when you've got that, why don't you read that, and then I'll for a comment or two.
Okay, so Matthew chapter 1, beginning in verse 24, it says, then Joseph, being aroused from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord commanded him, and took to him his wife, and did not know her till she had brought forth her firstborn son. And he called his name Jesus.
Okay. So just on a normal reading, normal English words, normal syntax, normal definition, Brian, what does verse 25 mean?
Well, what it's teaching us when it says that he did not know her, it means that he did not have any sexual relations with her. So in other words, she remained a virgin until Jesus was born. And so he had no contact with her sexually until after Jesus was born.
Exactly. And, you know, it's an interesting, and this is from, I think, if I remember correctly, the New King James, where the word know, in our vocabulary today, it's like, oh, I'm acquainted with somebody. Well, not according to King James use, New King James use, more knowing in a, you know, sexual relationship. And it's like right there, did not know her until she had brought forth her firstborn son. In fact, we can continue and pick up other threads of that story, Matthew chapter 12, further on when Jesus was preaching, verse 26. Evidently, he was in the middle of, you know, preaching to the multitudes, and it says this, while he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and his brothers stood outside seeking to speak with him. And one said to him, look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you. Jesus had brothers? Well, evidently. And Brian, if you want to kind of cap off this series of scripture readings with Matthew chapter 13, let's do verse 55 and 56.
Okay, it says here, and his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas and his sisters, are they not all with us?
Yeah, there you go. Which is interesting because not only does the Bible tell us that, you know, Mary and Joseph had kids, names, right? And at least in the case of the brothers, at least four brothers and some unknown number of sisters. So, you know, basically what that says is Jesus was firstborn, raised in a normal family, right? Like many families today with siblings, you know, brothers and sisters, which probably made for some interesting occurrences not recorded in the Bible, you know, growing up and interaction and Nazareth, et cetera. And again, that would definitely all be, you know, speculative. But, you know, did Jesus have brothers and sisters? Yeah, Did Murray have other children? Yeah, sure enough. Brian, any other thoughts before we leave this popular question?
Yeah, and this is another area where the Bible doesn't have a lot to say, but we also are told about his brothers in John chapter 7 and verse 5 that they did not believe in him. Right. And so does that mean they didn't believe in him at all as the Messiah? Probably, right? But anyways, that's just one other little note that the scriptures give us about his family.
Right. And before we leave this particular section, I might mention at our website, if you look under M or Mary, Mother Jesus, those particular articles, there's three of them, which are there that you'll find, that are they're a little bit more tailored to looking at Mary and how in some ways Catholicism has elevated her above and beyond the role of any other normal human, who was almost like a supernatural human, or in some ways almost like a goddess. It's prayed to, for instance, and has all these attributes, you know, ascribed to her. So there's that at our website. You know, Brian, speaking of, you know, relationships, which is kind of what this main section is about, from time to time, and I think in some ways even more so as time goes by, we get a fair number of questions about multiple marriages. And what I mean specifically in terms of at the same time, bigamy, polygamy, etc. Now, I know here in the United States, sometimes that's associated with Mormonism. Let's take a few moments here and see what the Bible has to say about this topic.
Yeah, polygamy, if you just define that word polygamy, it's defined as the practice or condition of having many or several spouses, especially wives at one time. And that's according to Random House College Dictionary. So that's just a, you know, general definition of the word polygamy. What we also see in the Bible is what might be called polygamy, which is, you know, when you have one man that marries multiple women. And that's actually what we probably see the most, Jeff, in the Bible when you think about Solomon and so forth. Mm-hmm. Now, what we do know is that polygamy was condemned by God in Deuteronomy chapter 17 and verse 16. And here it says, "But he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord has said to you, ye shall there henceforth return no more that way, neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold." So one of the things that God commanded and ensured that Solomon understood is that he did not want him to multiply horses to himself. He did not want him to multiply himself silver and gold. And probably most importantly, as we read in verse 17, that he did not want him to multiply wives to himself. Why? Well, because it says that his heart turned not away. And if you know the story of Solomon's life, that's exactly what happened. When he was older, the scriptures tell us that his wives turned his heart away from the Lord. And so we can certainly see the wisdom of God as to why he condemned polygamy, or in this case, polygamy. Anyhow,
it's easy for you to say.
Exactly. Now, there were certainly men, as we just talked about, like Solomon, that we read about in the Old Testament who had multiple wives, but that does not mean that God condoned it. In fact, we see in Matthew chapter 19 that Jesus quoted from Genesis 2:24 when he said, "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." So this shows us that it was always God's intention that there be one man married to one woman. Also, Jesus makes it clear in Matthew chapter 19 that a man and woman can only have a single sexual relationship and a single sexual partner. Otherwise, it's considered adultery. So anybody that would want to point, Jeff, to Solomon or others as examples of, well, see, they had many wives and concubines and God was just fine with it, so why can't we have that today? Well, we're incorrectly assuming that God condoned it. And we see under the law of Christ, which is the covenant that we live under today, that Jesus made it clear that in God's eyes, the appropriate marriage relationship is one man and one woman. And that's it.
Right. Now, some of our listeners, particularly if they're in the United States, might say, well, you know, that's an interesting question, but, you know, what? I mean, you know, culturally, you know, we don't have that problem here in the United States. To which I would respond in kind of a couple different ways. One is, well, actually, you do. You know, we did mention Mormonism, but we've also got, you know, a rising population of people of the Islamic faith. And they certainly, is my understanding, believe in a man having multiple wives. And so you may be encountering more of that as time goes by with your, you know, Muslim neighbors and friends and such. Certainly this podcast goes out around the planet, and there's a lot of other, you know, places around the world where polygamy is still, you know, very commonly practiced, you know, as a cultural norm even. But again, as you said, if you go look to the scriptures, that was not God's intention from the beginning, as Jesus points out in Matthew 19. The other thing I might mention, and honestly, you know, I'm not a prophet or a prophet, but, you know, over the last few decades, we have seen the rise of, I'll just say, sexual freedom. And under that canopy, certainly things that from a biblical perspective we might call fornication, or others might call free love, etc., male and female, group marriage, group sex, etc. A little bit more recently, we're seeing more male and male and female female sexual relationships within the domain of homosexuality. It would not surprise me in the future that those who believe in polygamy, for instance, which is now kind of somewhat of a stigma, you know, raise their hand and say, hey, what about us too? You know, what prevents, you know, three or four or six consenting adults in the privacy of their own bedroom, you've heard those arguments before, you know, being married in a loving, committed relationship. See it on TV, certain sitcoms. So, you know, in the future, who knows what the future may hold? Bottom line is, it's not something that we can just ignore, I think is probably the key point. But the other thing I might mention real quickly, just like all of our other sections, if you go to our website, under the letter P, we do have P for polygamy. There's also some links for things like, you know, F for fornication, M for marriage, that people can use to study with as well. So I think that kind of wraps up polygamy, doesn't it, Brian?
Yeah, other than I'll just say that under that section that you mentioned on polygamy, there is a article entitled Polygamy in the Bible, which I highly recommend to our listeners because it's very informative and helpful about a lot of things that we discussed and some other additional thoughts on that subject.
Cool. So continuing on with our theme of going to ask questions with respect to various relationships. According to my notes here, the next one is marriage to a relative.
Yeah, so Jeff, we get questions like, you know, when can close relatives marry, or can close relatives marry? So what do we find in the scriptures about that one?
Well, and that's a good one because, you know, it was just a few minutes ago where we were talking about Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel and Cain potentially marrying one of his close relatives, or Noah and his family marrying a close relative, or we didn't mention it, but I think Abraham and Sarah were like half brother, half sister, etc. And so it occurs in the Bible. Well, okay, what does that mean today? And I think really where we need to start with questions regarding marriage, the first question I think we probably need to ask or clarify on any prospect of marriage is whether or not the potential, you know, spouses have the right to marry at all, period. And, you know, that opens, and maybe this is another frequently asked question thing that we get into in the future. If we, I think, which we also may have done in the past, things regarding marriage, divorce, remarriage. Sometimes that's scriptural, more often that's not. And people think they went through a divorce process and they're allowed to marry, but in God's eyes, Matthew 19, Matthew 5, you know, they're not. So when it comes to you know, question about marriage, you know, that's probably where we need to start. I mean, do the people even have the right, scriptural right, especially if they've been married before? Now, if you kind of move, you know, beyond that, beyond Matthew 19:9 and 5:32, and assume they have the scriptural right to Mary, and they're a quote-unquote close relative, I think we probably want to start with a little bit of groundwork back in the Law of Moses, for starters, most notably in Leviticus, where God viewed sexual relationships and marriage by implication as being prohibited. In fact, in Leviticus, you can find a number of specific situations you'll called out regarding, you know, quote-unquote close relatives, you know, father and daughter, or son with his mother, and various other, you know, close family relationships. Now, of course, I would want to quickly add that Law of Moses given to the Jews, you know, done away with, replaced by Jesus's law, New Testament. You know, Christians are not, you know, quote unquote bound by the Law of Moses, but it certainly does indicate that God is somewhat concerned with the marriage of close relatives. Okay. Can't go too far in terms of quote unquote binding the Law of Moses, but at least note that degree of concern. Now, when we do come to the New Testament, this is again where we have to be, I think, a little bit careful. Personally, I'm not aware of any teaching that would define quote unquote close relatives. Okay. Does that mean anybody, everybody? Well, no, there are some general principles we'll find in the New Testament. I think, for instance, Romans chapter 13 talks about obeying civil authorities. And generally speaking, most civil governments, civil law, I know at least here in the United States, there are certain regulations regarding the legal definition of close relative. And those whom you are legally allowed to marry or not marry, right? And I think it probably depends on your jurisdiction. I think, like, you know, second cousin, maybe, give or take, might be kind of the boundary, just generally speaking. The other general principle I've found in the New Testament is 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 21, where it talks about those things that are offensive to the prevailing custom. So now you have kind of at least two factors at play. Civil law and society, both of which would constrain you from marrying, you know, quote unquote, too close relatives. And, you know, honestly, there's probably certain matters of judgment as well that probably be involved, like, you know, age differences or, you know, conflict within the family if you do those sorts of things. Anyway, so that's what I'm, you know, familiar with in terms of quote unquote close relative. Brian, anything you want to add?
Yeah, you know, when relatives are genetically related, so, you know, we talk about whether it's family as in brother, sister, mother, father, or even half-brothers, half-sisters, right? There's some genetic elements there. And so to me, you have to think that, you know, when we look at why did God in Leviticus prohibit, relations, sexual relations between close relatives, well, because there were genetic implications, right, is one of the reasons. Mm-hmm. And so I can't imagine that even if, let's say, you lived in a country or culturally, if it was acceptable, if there were going to be genetic repercussions by you having, you know, not only relations, but reproducing with somebody that has, you know, your genetics or family genetics. I can't imagine why somebody not only would want to do that, but that they would think that'd be okay to God. I mean, if he had once condemned it and we see the repercussions genetically, then I would want to stay as far away from something like that as I could. But anyhow, that's just my two cents on that.
And like for each of our sections, I'll just throw in the pointer to our website. In fact, we do have under the letter M a couple things related to marriage I might point out. We've got for marriage, duh. Also a pointer to marriage to a relative. That's one of the topics there as well, with kind of links over to Cain's wife, which is where we kind of started in this particular podcast, F for fornication, etc. So there you go, some further features to articles that you on. Okay, Brian, I think that's pretty much it on marriage to a relative. What's next? Or relationships.
Yeah, pets in heaven. So that even though, you know, you think about relationship, well, pets, right? They we have relationships with pets in the sense that they are like friends, children, some people call them, that kind of
thing. Very close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we'll get questions to the website about, you know, will there be pets in heaven? Because some people have really close relationships with their pets. And that is probably kind of helping that they'll be there. Well, you know, the Bible teaches that eternal life in heaven or hell, eternal punishment in hell for that matter, are for mankind, not animals. And we're told in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in body according to what he has done, whether good or bad." So, you know, animals do not possess the ability to reason and therefore are not accountable to God's laws. And so, therefore, they will not be judged based on their righteousness or wickedness. And there are really many passages that teach us truth besides 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10. So, you know, just from kind of a logical perspective, we see that it's accountable men and women who will be judged and will spend eternity based on how they live their life. At no point in the scriptures does it attribute that same judgment to animals. And as we just mentioned, it's really because they don't have the ability to reason. Even though they have a soul like man, they don't have an eternal soul. And you've probably heard this term, you know, dead all over like Rover. Well, that's just because once they die, they return to the dust. The Bible tells us that even with animals, that their spirit returns to the Lord. However, we don't see any continuation of that soul once they die. And so Ecclesiastes, I'll leave us with this final passage, and then any thoughts that you have, Jeff. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 21 says, "Who knows the spirit of the sons of men, which goes upward, and the spirit of the animal, which goes down to the earth?" So that passage certainly gives us the impression that an animal goes down to the earth and that's the end of it. And then, of course, our spirit of men and women goes upward and returns to God, who is the one that gave it to us.
Which, you know, kind of tie that back into our discussion about the afterlife, Hades, embodied spirit, as well as, you know, the great resurrection, receiving an incorruptible body, penal judgment, et cetera. The only other thing on this particular topic I might mention, a couple of different things. One is, you know, yeah, as you indicated, and our heart goes out to these people that have these very, very close relationships with their pets and their, you know, daily companions. They've got this, you know, loving bond. And like all living things, they die. That can be a very concerning, upsetting, like losing a child, kind of traumatic situation. And so people come into our website with this, you know, heavy heart to tell them, oh, don't worry, your, you know, treasured, you know, dog or cat or horse or whatever, you know, pet you had, is quote unquote in heaven waiting for you and is looking forward to, you know, a renewed relationship when you get there. It's like, no, I cannot offer that consolation. Now, is it something we might want? Okay, arguably can't argue with that. But again, based on what God has revealed, is there any evidence that would even give us occasion to make it probable? Well, no, Brian, as you said. And again, that's not to put down people that are, you know, heavily emotionally invested in their pets. Not at all. It's a very, you know, loving relationship. But in terms of the afterlife, not based on what we can see from the scriptures. For additional information, again, bring folks back to the website. We do have a section. It's called P4SWAT, Pets in Heaven. And the other thing, it's kind of obvious, but I'll just highlight it real quickly. Throughout last podcast and this podcast, you may have noticed that the way we've tried to set up our topical index is, you know, if you have a question on a topic, if you can kind of think of it in terms of a word, more often than not, you can go into the topical index, probably find the word and articles underneath it, or you might find the word and it might say, you know, go see this other topic where we've kind of consolidated, you know, information on a topic like suffering, for instance, or heaven or afterlife.
All right, Jeff. Well, hey, I tell you, that wraps episode 2. Certainly a lot of interesting questions, and I hope our listeners get a sense of some of the more popular questions and subjects that we get asked about. You know, as we've gone along, you know, we've pointed you back to our website for additional information. There's just a few other categories that I'll point to that also contain information along the lines of the questions and subjects that we've looked at in the last 2 episodes. And that is, when you go to the topics menu We were talking about the steps to salvation, and we were talking about seeking a church. So just want to remind you of those, because those are really important sections. We also have S for suffering. You could choose the letter P and look for the section on prayer. Section under, or the subject of afterlife, take a look under the letter A. Marriage, letter M. You can go to the letter F for fornication. And then also H for heaven and for Hades. And so just some additional information for you to look at.
As we've said throughout, we've tried to kind of cluster some of these more popular items, you know, on a single page. You know, if, again, you go to the topics menu item, the very first one underneath topics is popular, in addition to the ones Brian mentioned regarding steps of salvation and seeking a church, et cetera. And almost as a teaser, if you go to that popular page, in addition to some of the things we've been talking about here in the last two podcasts, you know, Brian, I think you said there's at least 40 plus here. And
yes, 44 to be exact.
And indeed, very popular. I mean, we get lots of questions on dating, marriage, family, divorce, etc. So we have an entry there for that. Somewhat controversial subjects like death penalty, for instance. Dinosaurs. You know, we've got an entry there as well, along with the global flood. I think we mentioned in passing homosexuality, very prominent social topic these days. Other kinds of topics you'll find on that page, you know, almost as a teaser, if you will. Miracles, you know, tongue speaking. We mentioned music. We mentioned, you know, with this coronavirus, a lot of people thinking, you know, signs of the times and the end of the world. There's an entry there for premillennialism. Brian, you mentioned earlier about free moral agency, which kind of flies in the face of what some people believe in terms of predestination. You know, that's there as well. Worship on Sabbath versus Sunday, tattoos, thief on the cross, women leaders. I mean, if you can imagine it, it's probably been asked, and in some cases asked very frequently. So key point, please come to the website, see the kind of material we've got, look at the articles. Most importantly, though, look at the scriptures, read the scriptures for yourself, dig into the Bible, make sure it's the Bible that you're reading and following. Don't just take our word for it. Don't take your pastor or your priest or your rabbi's word for it. Actually dig in there and see what the Bible actually says, and your spiritual life will be greatly benefited as a result.
Yeah, so appreciate those thoughts, Jeff. That's a great page. And as you mentioned, it does contain a lot of what we hear about, or are asked about, I should say, frequently. I'd like to leave us with just one final passage as we wrap up this episode, and that is 2 Timothy 2:15, to go with what you just said, Jeff, right, about studying. And the King James Version of this verse says, "Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." And so it's our hope that all of you who are listening have that as your primary goal, to rightly understand and apply God's word so that you will not be ashamed, but instead will be somebody that God is proud of.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Bible Questions Podcast. We invite you to visit our website at BibleQuestions.org, where you can find over 1,000 scripture-filled articles on a wide variety of Bible topics, along with about 24 free Bible study lessons and other Bible study aids. Plus, you can submit a Bible question to us to get a personal response within a couple of days. Check it all out at BibleQuestions.org.